Shabbat Shalom. This is an archive sermon from last year. I want to thank you so much for joining me this week. This is Rabbi Jim Egolf. In this week's Torah portion, we're going to take a look at the Torah portion known as Mishpatim and try to get to some of its limits in terms of what does it really mean to be a Reformed Jew. I hope you enjoy, and thank you so much for tuning in this week. Shavuot Tov. When my son, oldest son, was about two, he began to learn basic words. One of those first words he learned was no. He was an expert at the word no. My oldest knew how to use it skillfully when it came to me and my wife. To him, it was like magic. He would say the word, and we were supposed to stop doing something. Saying no to him meant something different. To my oldest, it meant different things such as run faster or keep an eye on the parents. They just might interfere in my plans. Clearly, the word meant different things, but one thing it did convey, in all these circumstances, was a sense of limit, either one to be set or one to be broken. Parshat Mishpatim is also about limits. One of the first things it addresses is the whole notion of how the Israelites were to practice indentured servitude. The text continues with a variety of laws to the Israelites. Ultimately, these are the ways in which the Israelite community will need to behave to accomplish the notion put forth in the previous Torah portion, "You shall be to me a nation of priests, a holy people." In due course, the Israelites will be different because there will not be one law for the privileged and another law for the regular person. There will be one law. It is great to be a nation of priests, but part of what gets lost in translation is that being a priest, or any godly person, is more than just a status of privilege. It is also, at its heart, a status of servitude and work. If we think of the world of a priest in ancient times, we find a man, such was the world at that point, who was responsible for living in a sacred world. The Temple Mount in Jerusalem was the place where you went to work, and every time a priest entered that place, he found himself surrounded by a world that was holy and sacred. It was not enough that he himself held a special status. Almost everything in his world had a sacred meaning of which he had to be acutely aware. The sacred was not about God loving the priests more. Heck, if you managed to err while on the Temple Mount, the wrath of God would be brutal and swift to punish you. So to be a nation of priests and a holy people is not a statement of being privileged. It is a way of looking at the limits that we live within and understand what it means to be holy and live within those limits. Indeed, this is, in part, one of the largest arguments put forth by the early Reform movement when our theological ancestors looked at the established Judaism that would be what we now know today as Orthodoxy. There were differences and disagreements between those who saw in Jewish texts and history that limits had to exist and could only exist within a meaningful context. They felt that the established Judaism of their day, the Reform movement, Reform founders felt the established movement Judaism of their day, continued to enforce limits that had little meaning in their day, The notion that Judaism needed to evolve drove them to attempt to define Judaism by re-examining the limits they had inherited and continued to push Judaism forward, lest it be left behind in the battle for meaning. From this point forward, we have often been very wary in our movement of limits. In fact, I once had the following encounter. A young man walked into an office during the course of doing his business. He was in college, and he was invited to a Passover Seder. He answered, "I'm a Reformed Jew. I don't have to do Passover." I challenged him unsuccessfully, but the episode left me troubled. Claims that because we are Reformed Jews, we have no limits, begins to wear at the notions of a Judaism based on solely on intelligence and thoughtful consideration, as opposed to actually touching on spiritual and emotional matters, things which make up all of us. Sacred meaning can only be accomplished through a personal, holy responsibility to wrestling with the godly and God. To dismiss religion based on religion is, well, in and of itself, irreligious. Compare for a moment the statement, "I'm a Reformed Jew. I don't have to do," you may fill in the blank, with the statement on tradition of the first Pittsburgh platform from 1885, where our forebearers said, "We recognize in the Mosaic legislation a system of training the Jewish people for its mission during its national life in Palestine, and today we accept as binding only its moral laws and maintain only such ceremonies as elevate and sanctify our lives, but reject all such as are not adaptable to the views and habits of modern civilization." Number four, we hold that all such Mosaic and rabbinical laws as regulate diet, priestly purity, and dress originated in ages and under the influence of ideas totally foreign to our present mental and spiritual state. They fail to impress the modern Jew with a spirit of priestly holiness. Their observance in our day is apt rather to obstruct than to further modern spiritual elevation. If this student had gotten into an argument with me over meaning, or stated anything resembling the language of the Pittsburgh platform, then he would have had both a legitimate Reformed position on the issue, as well as my respect for making a knowledgeable decision. The fact that he dismissed Passover as if it were a bad performance of a play, except with the play he would have at least considered the review. But the fact that he dismissed it was not only not Jewish, it wasn't even within the boundaries of Reformed Judaism. Part of our identity as Jews is unique because of the encounter with the young man above. Not every Jew, and not everyone who claims to be a Reformed Jew, understands how to deal with limits. Some of us derive our understanding of limits from what it means to be a Jew in other ways. Many feel much more Jewish when doing other things than just when they pray or learn. Take, for example, one of my congregants from Jackson, Mississippi. Irv and Judy ran the old-time deli. Forget where you were from. If you were Jewish and arrived in Jackson, the moment you could order a corned beef sandwich at the old-time deli, it could be a more life and Jewish identity-affirming moment than any sermon I might deliver. Corned beef, in the land of bologna with American cheese and mayonnaise on white bread, the old-time deli was a machaya. Anyway, the point is that Judaism is not always just about religious limits, and regardless of the issue of kashrut, that bologna sandwich, you know, There are also limits to what one eats regardless. This week we encountered another limit that has to make us wonder. It involves meaning and bad memories. It also might make us wonder of who was thinking of what and when, but I'm getting ahead of myself. It was reported, quote, "In the space of a week, we have had a professor from an Orthodox-oriented Israeli university argue that some medieval blood libel against the Jews were based in fact. We have had Muslim clerics declaring that the Jewish temples of antiquity never existed, and that there is no evidence that they ever did, that the Jews' insistence that they did was the greatest fraud crime in history, that the Western Wall is a Muslim site, that Jews' reverence for it and for Jerusalem is a relatively recent and politically motivated phenomenon. Not coincidentally, we have had an Egyptian legislator, Mohammed el-Hatani of President Hosni Mubarak's ruling party, informing Parliament that, quote, that cursed Israel is trying to destroy Al-Aqsa Mosque, close quote, and, quote, nothing will work with Israel except a nuclear bomb that wipes it out of existence, close quote. And now we have Mitt Romney. On Tuesday, the former governor of Massachusetts is set to formally launch his campaign for the Republican nomination for the presidency. He has chosen as the venue a museum which bills itself as America's greatest history attraction, the Henry Ford Museum in Dearborn, Michigan, named for America's greatest anti-Semite. Named for a man revered by Adolf Hitler, who awarded him the Grand Service Cross of the Supreme Order of the German Eagle. Named for the U.S. publisher of the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion, and the international Jew, the world's foremost problem. There is something bold and innovative about that old-time Jew hate as well. When it comes back after being gone so long, its adherents have that feeling of freshness and renewal. What's next? Accusations of bubonic plague. Well, now lest anyone think that this came out of the mythical left-wing media, the passage I just shared with you is from Haaretz, the Israeli newspaper written by Bradley Burstyn in his column, A Special Place in Hell. It may take an Israeli or a thinking American public to understand what it means to invoke the name of Henry Ford at the beginning of a political campaign. Clearly, there is a line. A limit has been crossed. Whether it is a limit of good taste or a deeper issue of hatred remains to be seen. Needless to say, though, and to repeat myself, a limit was crossed. Like the former governor of Massachusetts standing in front of the company that his father worked for in his home state, he could not understand the limitations on using such a venue. As opposed to apologizing and assigning the error to a staffer, he has decided to declare that he is right no matter what others think. Wrestling with limits, especially in Judaism, is a matter of deep importance because the limits define us. Let's go back to the old-time deli. Do you want the bologna sandwich on white or the corned beef on rye? On the surface, a trivial choice over one's lunch. But what drives you to the choice you make? In the case with Governor Romney, a limit that he may not have seen, but one only needs to know America's history to understand the problem of extolling Henry Ford's virtues. And I use that last word very loosely. No one told Mitt that he got to choose which meanings people saw in his event. Finally, for us, there is the message of Reformed Judaism and choices. When we define ourselves and our choices through Reformed Judaism, then we are being true to the principles of learning and understanding the Jewish decisions we make. When we don't, or worse, we use Reformed Judaism as an excuse, we are being true to neither Judaism nor the ideals of Reformed Judaism. we can't use the moniker of reform to capriciously dismiss the limits Judaism places before us. Only study and learning can truly do that. And the limit of learning needs to be the limit that we do not traverse. I wish you a wonderful and blessed week. Shavua Tov. Music you hear on this podcast is available from Magnatune.com. That's Magnatune.com.
Oh, may it be your will.